At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Evangelical Dark Web. Tonight, we are going to do our fourth annual year-end live stream. We are doing it in the beginning of the following year for the first time ever, but, you know, Christmas fell on a Wednesday, so doing it the day after Christmas didn't seem super fitting, even though we did a live stream the day after Christmas anyway, which was very timely at the time. So with that said, I wanted to discuss, the year in review of 2024, and what better way to start out with that than getting to the top 10 stories of the year. But first, I want you to know, Evangelical Dark Web is a Christian news gathering and commentary ministry. Our goal is to be Christian news by Christians and for Christians. And in 2025, I do want to grow and expand this ministry rapidly. Would appreciate any support. The least you can do is like this video, subscribe to the channel, to the podcast, if you are new, because new subscriptions are the best way to help a channel grow, by the way, on YouTube. Number one way. I don't know if anything else really even does anything. So, with that said, also check out my book, Winning Not Winsome, 10 Commandments of Spiritual Warfare. I do got to give a spoiler alert. This book did not win Book of the Year, which will be on our award show section of the live stream. But I think it's pretty good. You should check it out and get it. That's linked in the description below as well. And it went on sale on Amazon if you wanted the hard copy. That went on sale on Amazon. I have no control over the price, just saying. So, with that said, you ready to dive into the top 10 stories of 2024?
Yeah, let's do this.
All right, let's pull it up, and here we go. This one, I actually did need some help with this list, and you gave this one to me. Number 10, we are going to dive into Big Eva's immigration treachery. So the evangelical industrial complex, which we call Big Eva around here, has long been a proponent of open borders. Beginning in 2024, the Southern Baptist Convention made amnesty for illegal aliens a lobbying priority. Later, they would partner with a George Soros-backed group to promote a narrative that evangelicals supported amnesty. Moreover, while it was not surprising that many NGOs supported the invasion at the southern border, more surprising additions to this list include Send Relief of the Southern Baptist Convention and Franklin Graham's Samaritan's Purse. That latter one's really surprising because Franklin Graham is like your MAGA celebrity pastor. He's a Trump leg humper. And for him to fuel the southern border with Samaritan's Purse is, again, very duplicitous on his part. And he's lied about that, too, on Fox News. When Haitians would overrun in every town in Ohio, Big Eva would support the Haitian invaders who were fraudulently processed as refugees. This would stand opposed to evangelicals as a voting bloc who voted overwhelmingly to support a popular mandate of mass deportations as part of Trump's 2024 victory. Even after this, Big Eva continued to support amnesty. And there's a lot of links in this section because we've covered a lot of the stories here.
Yeah, for those that are like new to the channel or just new to who we are, yeah, a lot of the stuff we did earlier in 2024, this is why I pitched this as a top 10 stories, because for years, Big Eva and all these like NGOs have been profiteering and otherwise facilitating the invasion of this country. And we've always heard from a lot of these institutions, Christian institutions like, Gospel Coalition, Christianity Today, and of course, even our own denominations that, hey, we got to support the refugees at the border. There's a crisis at the border. We got to support them. And what you actually find is on the bottom end, or I guess I should say the South American end, that's where Franklin Graham and Samaritan's Purse partner with a UN organization to basically aid refugees from, Venezuela and Colombia, which again, I mean, when they give the UN initiative money, I mean, part of that initiative actually sponsors reproductive health, which is basically code for abortion. So that's what Samaritan's Purse does. And then if you go towards the border, that's where Send Relief is. And there's even a video that I linked in the article that actually shows the people at one of the sites that the SBC sponsors being handed money. And you can tell it's in $10 increments. That is one of those places where, you know, these immigrants are receiving money as they're being bussed elsewhere into the country. So,
yeah, it's important to note that Franklin Graham Samaritan Purse was fueling, like, I don't know what you would call it. It's not the Silk Road. I think Cocaine Road would be a little too complimentary, but whatever you want to call it, the road that people travel to cross the southern border, Samaritan's Purse was helping facilitate.
I call it
that.
A conveyor belt. And so
conveyor,
they're at the beginning of the conveyor belt, and then SBC's at the end. And yeah, there's a lot of organizations that do this, that, you know, they brand themselves as Christians, but they're not ran as Christians. But a lot of the ones that the SBC, obviously they brand themselves as Christian, but the SBC and Send Relief, they're partnering with like the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship and like the General Baptist of Texas. So they're basically partnering with all the Baptist churches that left them over the conservative resurgence. And surprise, surprise, these liberal churches are sponsoring an invasion of our country.
I'm going to say that's a surprise to no one. And next on the list is the fall of Alistair Begg. Alistair Begg was once a highly respected Reformed preacher. In January of 2024, Evangelical Dark Web, that was us actually, that broke the story of the advice that he gave a grandmother encouraging her to attend a homosexual wedding. This created a major controversy for the otherwise scandal-free minister. But rather than repent for his sinful counsel, Alistair Begg doubled down and chastised American evangelicals for their lack of nuance. Begg was canceled from major conferences and ministries due to his compromise on homosexual weddings. This happened back in January, whereas the first story was a year-round thing. This was a January story that stayed in the top 10 all year.
Yeah, I mean, this is one that, again, we made this story a national cycle as far as like a lot of people in Con Inc. were talking about this. And it really just shows how antinomian a lot of like churches and leadership is. Because again, if you actually looked at what the Bible would say you're to do in this situation, it would resemble something like disowning the relative in question that would be committing this sin. And it doesn't matter whether it's homosexuality or even, you know, the daughter goes on OnlyFans, like the idea that you should be in, I guess, communion might be or in fellowship with a relative that does certain sins is ridiculous and completely antithetical to what the entirety of scriptural counsels. Because I use David and Absalom as a case where, you know, David's son commits murder and he's essentially in exile. And that was the proper thing to do. So you don't welcome him back to the palace. That was not the right thing to do for David. But most pastors would counsel, hey, yeah, you're supposed to like, you know, love them back to Jesus rather than like, you know, give them punishment that is a precursor to the punishment that is to come.
Yeah, this train of the top 10 stories is like a list of pastoral scandals.
Yeah, I mean, this is
you should have seen the pastoral scandals that don't make the list. So what are we at? Number 8, fall of Robert Morris. Cause I didn't number these in the article. So Gateway Church was once the largest megachurch in the United States until Robert Morris confessed to having committed child molestation. This is after he got caught, of course, a continued course of conduct for years. Apparently Robert Morris lied about his past to elders and the failure of all involved for their failure to report to police in 1987 led to a major embarrassment for the church and one of multiple scandals for the mega church in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Gateway Church would then do a major staff overhaul and face a lawsuit from congregants over financial infidelity. Part of that staff overhaul is they brought in Max Lucado to be their preacher, hireling, on Sunday mornings. So they've had a lot of changes and scandals at Gateway Church. Robert Morris being the I don't want to say the catalyst, because it was like the major hole and breach in the hall of the church.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of stories this year about Dallas-Fort Worth area churches that, you know, scandal here, scandal there, bad teaching here and there.
Yeah, T.D. Jakes, Tony Evans,
Steve Lawson. We even covered Prestonwood on, like, at least three examples. We covered Prestonwood and various things happening there. So a lot of just happenstance here. And, yeah, this one's not impactful overall for the church as a whole, but it was a major story that happened in 2024.
Yeah. Next, I got to go with Steve Lawson at number seven. In the Reformed world, Steve Lawson was a major deal and perhaps a successor to John MacArthur's audience. However, Steve Lawson lived a double life, having an adulterous relationship with a woman nearly a third his age. Additionally, he was not a pastor and not functionally a member of Trinity Bible Church. Despite this glaring ecclesiastical deficiency, Lawson was platformed in ecclesiocentric circles such as G3 Ministries, Grace to You, and the Master's Seminary. To make matters worse, Steve Lawson has not repented.
Yeah, I mean, this one also a major scandal that, you know, it actually is a lot more impactful for the church overall than even Robert Morris, even though, you know.
A lot more impactful for this channel.
The actions of Lawson were probably not as sinful, or certainly were not as sinful as that of what Morris was accused and I guess has confessed to have done. And we're still not even sure exactly what happened with Lawson and the girl, other than that, even though they claim it wasn't sexual, there clearly seems like there had to have been something in the background. And
yeah, I don't know how you keep a girl on 20s in her ice like that, who's already a little bit loose for older married men. Just saying, I don't know how that works. I don't know how a person sins like that, but does not cross the line of fornication. So, and yeah, like Veritax points out, he wasn't an actual pastor, which is part of the scandal, because he was paraded around in circles that, frankly, some of these people believe in giving pastors too much authority, like over people's lives. Like, some of these people are actually would-be tyrants in their own congregation, at least the way they talk about church authority on the internet. They would be tyrants to their own congregation. And yet, they celebrated Steve Lawson, who not only was Steve Lawson nowhere to be found on most relevant issues, which I almost added a jab like that in the article. It's like, if you're wondering why Steve Lawson has not been relevant on major issues concerning the church, yeah, consider the fact that he's living a double life.
I mean, that also could be said of Alistair Begg, because we had never actually written an article about Alistair Begg at all.
Or Steve Lawson.
Until, like, obviously the scandals and stuff happened. So it does kind of, and again, he's what, 72? So he's already kind of like on his way out, so to speak. And yeah, I don't understand how this happened, but it was a major story that impacted a lot of churches, and you know, it showed a lot of gaps in oversight, especially with regards to Trinity. Like, and then they kind of did the whole he's a lead preacher versus Pat, which again makes no sense, but
they hid that in plain sight.
Yeah,
but they used goodwill to, or they allowed the goodwill of his ministry to overlook a glaring deficiency. Like, these people never checked out his website to make a bio for a conference. Or the church's website, I should say. So, where are we at? So, we're at five now? We're at five now, right? Number five, beginnings of national revival. So, this is a little more speculative in nature. So, 2024 is a year with many high-profile celebrity conversions, with Russell Brand, Nala Ray, Hulk Hogan, and others, indicating a national revival might be underway in America. Bible sales would similarly indicate a positive trend in this direction. While the conversion of Brand is debated, and Jordan Peterson and Denzel Washington have claimed Christianity without a credible profession of faith, the revival appears to be underway, and in my estimation, is being driven by young white males, the people that Big Eva has spent decades alienating. This is the beginning of what years from now will be marked as a period of revival and thus a major story in 2024.
Yeah, this one's kind of, you know, a lot of, might not have made a lot of people's top tens, but obviously if you start piecing together like, oh, this person, you know, Russell Brand, even Enola Ray, which again, I think that one's a lot more dubious, especially with regards to her husband, who I think is also kind of a little nuts if you actually look into him. So, but yeah, Russell Brand, where it's like three steps forward, two steps back, and how he, his faith has managed, and he still kind of makes it a little bit about himself. But if you go beyond the celebrities, the cultural shift is there. And a lot of these, like, people, obviously, the, as you kind of mentioned, they spent years chastising the, you know, the white males in favor of minority pushes. We got to make the church more diverse, which basically is a fancy word for less white. And we got to have, you know, minority programs and at our seminaries instead of, like, you know, most of your pastors for SBC are probably going to be young white males. And that's what the revival would have to look like in, you know, like in a country like America. And you're starting to see that. And there's a vibe shift happening. And a lot of people, and we'll probably mention it later on, but a lot of people are still chastising, you know, the young men. The young men, and this goes to like Wilson and James White, the people that you think, okay, they're like already in the stage, already in prime position to take these men on and like lead them. They're also turning them away. So the church has to grapple with, hey, we have a revival happening. This is what it looks like. And a lot of these people, yeah, they need to be discipled. That's a good thing, but that's a continuous process.
Yeah. I mean, and the church spent decades alienating young white men. And to the irony, I believe that that's where the revival is happening in the United States, which is going to be demographically the case. But let me, because majority of the country is white, but let me tag on the male part for a second here, because I'm not trying to be sexist or anything. But data shows, I believe it's from 1995 onward, young men are more churched than young women from 1995 onward.
Yeah, and that's...
So if you look at the adult church population, 1995 is when that, as a birth year, is when that changes. Birth year, not year.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
So that is why I can credit that more to young men than young women.
So yeah,
and also Kamala Harris and Taylor Swift.
Yeah, that Zoomer shift of, you know, appealing, that Trump was able to capitalize on, is happening also in the church level. Yet a lot of times the church is chasing after the Swiftie when they should be chasing after the young gamer bro.
Yeah.
And the sad part is, again, going back to the people that should have been most in the driver's seat to take advantage of this are still turning it down. They still don't want the revival. They think it's gay.
All right. Shepherds for Sale exposes, number four, Shepherds for Sale exposes Big Eva to a larger audience. Shepherds for Sale is definitely the book of the year, exposing the corruption to mainstream conservative audience. It was a difficult process for this book to be published, and it exposed to a more casually Christian audience the evils of men like Russell Moore, J.D. Greer, David French, and more. The book garnered controversy for going after Gavin Ortland, apparently ahead of the Overton window on exposing this liberal actor. Simply put, Megan Basham's work was able to teach even me some new aspects of corruption in Big Eva, and her book was a bestseller with a huge impact for a reason. So there's like a whole month, maybe a month and a half, where the news stories were dedicated to this book.
It wasn't about Trump getting shot and, you know, the Kamala
Swift. This was after Trump was, getting shot.
I know, but that whole month of July, it was for sale.
August and September, but yeah. Yes.
And obviously, yeah, Gavin Ortland's a big one as far as, like, you know, who's going to be like the rising face for like liberal Christianity, probably him, even though he kind of quit on his church and like to become an online personality, which is,
Well, what Megan Basham specifically writes about Gavin Ortlund is that he is the type of messaging that they want to reach young people, that he is the packaging that they want.
Yeah, so he's known a lot of times for apologetics. So he had, which is a weird field where a lot of like liberal leaning evangelicals exist, because they can have the veneer of they're defending orthodoxy when on a lot of like social issues they don't.
All right, so I'm ready to get to number, was it three now? No, this is actually, sorry, that was number five. Shepherds for Sale was number five. Fall of Syria threatens Christians. This is number four. The downfall of the Assad regime threatens the livelihoods of Christians in Syria. As a global event, the downfall of a regime is a major story, but like most recent developments in the Middle East, it is the Christian populations that will suffer most.
Yeah, I mean, if we've learned one thing about forever wars, it's that it destroys the church wherever it goes. You know, it's kind of like the flying saucer in Independence Day. It just wipes it out, wipes out everything that's underneath it. And that's what American Zionist wars do. So.
All right. So number three, this is a subject that we've covered a lot here on Evangelical Dark Web. Woke Wars 2. Among Christians who opposed wokeness as of 2021 and 2022, there was a split on the issue of modern Jews, with one side recognizing modern Jews as pagans on the same level as Islam, and the other side carving out a standard of sinful partiality reserved for this powerful demographic. As dispensationalism has been a subject of intensifying debate in evangelicalism, so too has the view of Jews in the modern age, with many evangelicals under the influence of John Hagee or adopting his erroneous view of church history. That's a link to James White and his view on the Crusades, by the way. And fun fact, I had to correct this. It said James Hagee at first. I had to fix that typo. In contrast, many Christians are recovering more classical views of Jews, as well as being unable to ignore patterns of behaviors associated with this demographic. In Woke Wars 1, evangelical leaders went woke for Black people in light of the racism narrative promoted by liberal activists. Woke Wars 2 is the same war with Jews instead of Blacks and anti-Semitism instead of racism. A major clash in this was over Tobias Riemenschneider slander scandal and Doug Wilson's failed Antioch Declaration.
Yeah, so this really correlates with the revival happening amongst young white men, is because young white men are looking for a nation. They're looking for that identity, because people don't want corporatism and, McDonald's logos and all that stuff to be their identity. They want something more transcendent to be their identity. And obviously, Christianity fills that void, but there are other facets of identity, and most facets of your identity are unchosen. That's your family, that's your community, that's your nation, that's your race even. And part of this war is a denial of those things, because liberalism, deracinates humans from their innate identitarian characteristics, whether it be their family, their nation, and so forth. And that's as much a part of this as the noticing question, because when you see who is actually going to war against your nation, you'll notice that one group of people is in charge and they're promoting all the vice, their homosexuality, like literally the entire Democrat social platform is promulgated by one group of people, and it's not the trade unions.
Because Trump is winning over a lot of these blue collar Democrats that used to be, that just hated Republicans because of the corporatism thing. But things have flipped in the United States on along the lines of where corporate America stands and where the working class stands. So, which also ties into the immigration question, which was the first number 10 issue on this list. So number two, SBC refuses to ban female pastors. The Southern Baptist Convention had a chance to ban female pastors, keeping with the Baptist Faith and Message 2000, although it's kind of the Baptist Faith and Message 2023 because they amended it. Despite fighting a conservative resurgence decades ago on this issue, which forced a lot of liberals out of the SBC. The Southern Baptist Convention has many churches with female pastors, of which Rick Warren was merely a high-profile example. Instead, Southern Baptists voted to protect female pastors with the full endorsement of their institutional leaders and recent presidents.
Yeah, I mean, this, I do call feminism the number one issue that's impacting the church today. And even as you're seeing politics becoming more feminism versus, you know, tradition, so to speak, you're seeing that still play out in the church. And the church is lagging behind society in trying to rebuff and even confront feminism. And you're seeing that in the Southern Baptist Convention when they can't even ban female pastors despite it being explicitly, you know, prohibited in scripture.
I mean, it was embarrassing for the Southern Baptists to be at this point because they have so many, like Brent Leatherwood's church. He is a cooperative program entity head, has female pastors. I remember reporting on that. I didn't know it was his church, but, and that their church filed a fraudulent DMCA takedown request on me for screenshotting their website. So that's the type of church that we're dealing with. And for exposing the fact that they had female pastors, they came after me for that. And, you know, they lost because they weren't willing to go to court.
And just to like point out how big the female pastor issue is, like you had like, the Reformed Theological Seminary that did a whole video of their incoming seminary class. And like half the cafeteria room looks like it's female. And that's Legan Duncan that promoted that video. So it's not just the SBC where this issue is major. Obviously, you know, I think I covered the Australian Lutherans who approved women's ordination, and even like Calvin Robinson's a little weak on that issue because we published a story about him defending a woman getting trashed in the comment section for being ordained either as church Anglican or Church of England. So it is an issue everywhere in the globe, and it is the biggest issue confronting the church, and that's why it's number two.
Number one, I think this is a pretty easy one. White evangelicals drive Donald Trump to victory. Contrary to belief, the church was not divided on whether to support Donald Trump or Kamala Harris, but rather Donald Trump or not voting at all. But the Christians who did vote voted overwhelmingly, 81-82%, for Donald Trump, being a critical block for Trump's resounding victory in 2024. This story highlights the disparity between the laymen and the clergy who are to the left of their flock. It also highlights the disparity between white evangelicals and every other religious demographic, especially modern Jews, one of the few blocks that Kamala Harris improved upon. This election further highlighted the futility of the term Judeo-Christian.
I mean, not just Jews, but also gays. And apparently, you know, 60% of Indians also voted for Kamala Harris. But yes, this was, you know, the Stephen Wolf tweet, white evangelicals are the lone bulwark against moral insanity in America. And it proved it once again. And of course, you know, MAGA hat to, you know. And again, it goes to show that all the big Eva third wayism, the promoting of the American Solidarity Party, and the constant attempts to morally equivocate between Biden or Kamala and Donald Trump, while they're completely fine with the Democrat agenda, it's always, you know, kiss left, punch right. And that, you know, those chickens are just, you know, that you know, the dog's not hunting. You know, the chickens came home to roost and, you know, they went for Donald Trump.
Right. So it definitely seems that way. And I could have added to the fact that evangelicals for Kamala Harris was a major fail because they tried to astroturf that so much. But at the end of the day, the liberal Christians didn't really show up for Kamala Harris in the same way that they might have shown up for Joe Biden.
So, well, even still, no one's listening to their messaging anymore. I mean, they tried to like guilt trip us on the Haitians. Oh, how dare you demonize the Haitian? You know, they're not eating the dogs, even though, you know, if you've been in those communities and if you live in like South Florida where a lot of those people are, you probably know, yeah, that stuff happens. You know, they sacrifice chickens to voodoo or whatever for voodoo. And then, yeah, so you know it happens. It is real. And, you know, you import the third world, you become the third world.
And yeah, and yeah, and apparently even if you come from that culture, you know, running cars into people is still the thing there, I guess.
We should have known that after, you know, they ran airplanes into buildings, but anyway, we imported more Muslims after 9/11 than we had before.
Yeah, it was kind of a dumb idea, if you think.
Well, you had a lot of these big EVA types. I think, you know, Ray Ortland did the whole, you know, what Biden never, what was it? Trump, never Trump, always Jesus or something. Like he did something like that, that then got roasted.
This time Kamala.
This time Kamala, yeah. So you see a lot of the people.
That was Ray Ortland that did that, I thought.
Yeah. But a lot of the people were doing everything they could to like counter signal Trump. And at the end of the day, it still happened. Abolitionists as well for different reasons.
But again, at least those people, after the election's over, we can at least come back together on most things. We'll see about other controversies throughout the year, but
and you
the G3 people have always kind of been purity spiralers.
Well, the other thing you did see,
we'll talk more about that probably next
is week. That you're also seeing maybe a couple shifts in the clergy towards the Republicans. Like obviously, like, you know, we talked a little bit about Josh Howerton this year, kind of, you know, even though he's like egalitarian, but he's still kind of like following in that mark.
He used to be pretty woke though, or at least soft woke.
I mean, Matt Chandler's kind of softening the wokeness a little bit. Obviously he's not perfect, and even the feminists don't like him because of his dealings. So maybe there's a transformation there.
J.D. Greer is trying to rebrand himself, even though he also supported female pastors in the SBC. So again, don't buy it. He's a wolf.
So yeah, you're going to see a lot of two faces emerge that, you know, they were completely woke, liberal, so forth. And they're going to try to like get back on your good side using the cultural tide.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.